My name is Michael Hoyt, and this is topical panel number nine, Therapist Inspiration and Renewal. I hope that's what you're here for. Welcome. I'm glad you're all here. Dr. Shelley Ritterman. Shelley is a Berkeley-based clinical psychologist, and she's also the author of a number of excellent books. This is a classic, which you must read if you haven't, Using Hypnosis in Family Therapy. It's in the Zeig bookstore. And in her most recent published book, The Tao of a Woman, is a wonderful book. You'll want to take a look at it also.
Hi. Glad to see each and every one of you here. And I want to thank Michael Hoyt for organizing this. A lot of work goes into the preparation of these, and this was Michael's brainchild. How's the sound? Yeah? Okay. And it's a pleasure to follow you, John Frickman, who is a very fine human being. And I think, you know, the most important thing that I've learned about therapy is that we get trained in these professional ways. But the important thing, especially as you get older, I think you know that, is the person. It's being in the presence of the person. I've always been stunned when I've been invited places and people didn't want to just sit together with me, because it's in the being that we discover each other, and it was certainly in the being that I discovered Erickson, and maybe that's how I learned that it's the being above all through which you can transmit the healing messages. So I want to just tell you as many stories as I can. Let's see, my clock says 139. What's 15 plus one? Okay, 140, 155. Okay, on the mark, get set, go. So I want to tell you as many stories as I can. I think it will just be two. I was an intern. I think the theme is also going to be that it only takes one. That's probably the theme of my stories. I was an intern at Philadelphia Child Guidance Clinic, and I was studying with Salvador Mnuchin and Jay Haley, and I was watching every day behind the mirrors and with my own clients as a 26-year-old, all these amazing transformations that could occur within individual members of families just by reorganizing strategically the relationships of the family, helping one who was close to someone get closer to another member of the family and so on, you would see that the symptoms would abate in an individual that wasn't even directly part of that reorganization. So I learned very well that context influences us at a profound level, but I didn't understand how. Exactly how did that work? Meanwhile, I was also studying with Jay Haley, and Jay was teaching me strategic therapy, and he slipped me a copy of Advanced Techniques of Hypnotherapy of Milton Erickson. So I was sneaking around at the clinic, inserting little trances into my family therapy sessions, but I didn't know what I was doing yet. So one day, Salvador Mnuchin called me into the first premier private showing of a production of Milton Erickson's Interview with a beautiful young woman named Mandy. Have any of you seen it? It's a must-see. So I watched Milton Erickson with Salvador Mnuchin, my mentor, and Herb Lustig, who made the movie. We sat in that room together, and from the second I laid eyes on Milton Erickson's work, I knew I was seeing something I would never see in graduate school. Instead of diagnosing the woman, which of course would happen now because she had social anxiety and it would be called social anxiety syndrome, Milton Erickson looked at this woman and entered into her mind with her at the exact moment before she enters a group. When he entered in, using subjective time, into that exact moment, he found out what was going on in her unique brain cells, and he helped her learn to shift to a different state of consciousness, using her own memories and experiences to do so. He trained her how to respond differently to the agonizing moment in the blink of an eye, using the blink of an eye as the post-hypnotic induction. And I said, oh my God. And I remember that video as if, you know, I saw it yesterday. And my mentor, Salvador Mnuchin, said with some envy, she is hypnotized by the video. So I then went to study with Erickson every second I could, and there was a wonderful man who ran my clinic who you may have heard of, and he's also an amazing person, still alive, Harry Aponte. And he was, you know, quite a maverick. And I said, Harry, I don't have any money. I need to study with this man. We get money to go to APA, and I don't want to go to APA. I want to go to Milton Erickson. And he said, that's fine, Shelley. You can use your money any way you want. So thank you, Harry Aponte. So I went to study with Milton Erickson, and I came with hugs and kisses from Jay Haley. So I told Milton, hi, I'm here with hugs and kisses from Jay Haley. And we proceeded to spend an entire day together. And I learned more in those hours than I learned in many, many years of my life. And we became fast friends. And at the end of the session that we had that day, he said to me, well, so where's my gift from Jay? Okay, we talk about boundaries in this country all the time. And I said, I didn't remember what my gift from Jay was. I said, well, I don't know. What gift from Jay? And he said, the gift you came to bring me from Jay Haley. So I said, oh, okay. And I gave him a big hug and kiss, which would be illegal at this time. So, but you can't report him. Then I was the sole support of my family. My ex was in his cardiology residency. I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm hired to do this amazing job, and the guy sits on me, doesn't let me do a thing. I'm 6 months pregnant. I have a 1.5-year-old, and I tell the guy he could take his closet in academia, which he told me to be thankful for, and use it otherwise. And so I was then called upon to make a living on my own, support my family, and I said, oops. So I looked over my old videotape sessions of my work with families at Child Guidance Clinic. I showed myself a tape that I would use to teach in the community clinics that I then taught at to support the family. And I watched this tape, and in the tape I wanted to use as a teaching tape, this young man named David came in without his symptoms. And within 15 minutes of my brilliant work, he was manifesting all his symptoms. Difficulty to think straight, cardiovascular rapid, tachycardia, and guilt feelings. And I said, holy moly, I'm finished. I can't support a family. And then I said, wait a minute. This is the missing link. Go back. Look what you just saw. And I watched it 1,000 times, and I said, oh my God. He came in without his symptoms, and in 15 minutes of being in the family context with my, not doing enough, he manifested all his symptoms. And I said, that's it. The family hypnotizes its members. The symptoms are a trance state. It's no different than what Milton was doing with me. The family was doing to him. Only it was a negative trance that was induced. And I got to watch the family exactly, and I wrote about it in my first book, Using Hypnosis in Family Therapy, the exact techniques used by the family, and they followed the Rossi-Erickson hypnotic induction paradigm, which was not yet written. So you could read about it in the book. But I went to Milton. I mean, who else would care that I had a revelation that the way that the family therapy and the hypnotherapy fit together is that the family and society are the hypnotists, and the therapist is the counter-hypnotist, that we try to awaken people from the negative trances, that we're the awakeners. I went to Milton, and I said, Milton, I had an amazing idea, and I told him everything I just told you. And he said, why, young lady, I think that's a very good idea. And if I were you, I'd develop it. So I spent the rest of my life doing exactly that. And all my work has always been about establishing the details of exactly how society and family induce trance in people that is either good for them or bad for them. At the end of my time with Milton Erickson, I said to him, he put me up at the house, Betty babysat my child, they wrote to me for years. They were always there for me. And at the end of my time with him, I didn't know it was the end, but he said to me one day, how will you repay me? And I had studied with him for 6 years and so on. and I never paid him a penny. And I was a graduate student, just out of graduate school. And I said, oh my God, of course I should pay you. Wow, I really didn't think of it. And it was a terrible moment that he let me sit and squirm through. And he said, well, let me tell you a story. And I said, that would be good. Anything would be good at this point. And he said, well, I was a farm boy, as you know. And I was so primitive in my understanding of high-class society that when an aunt of mine offered to meet me and consider paying for my higher education, I wore farm gloves to go meet her. Because I heard rich people wear gloves when they meet wealthy people. So I wore farm gloves. I went to my aunt, and she said, Milton, would you like to get a higher education? I said, yes, I would. And she put me through undergraduate school. After that, I went to her again, and she said, Milton, what would you like to do now? And I said, well, I'd really like to go to medical school. He became a psychologist and a psychiatrist, as you may know. And she put me through medical school. And then she said to me at the end of it, now, Milton, how are you going to repay me? And he said, my reaction was an awful lot like yours. And she said, I'll tell you what you could do. You could either pay me back in money, and she had calculated the number of dollars it would be, or you can become a great healer. So I was 27 or 28. What was I then? 30. I was all right. I made it to 30. And he told me, you know, you're too young and too pretty to be taken seriously, and if I were you, I'd keep my opinions to myself until my hair is as gray as mine is. But I said to him, you know, I had to accept the challenge of the second one, and that my heart has forever accepted the challenge of giving healing everything I have. And that was a great inspiration to me, you know, as a young woman who wasn't being taken seriously. And he did. He took me to the depth of my soul. And I say, you know, those moments, those connections save a life. So the last time I saw him, I said, hey, you know, I'm afraid you're going to die. I can't live without you. I need you. You know, you're cool. There's nobody like you. And he said, why, young lady? He liked to call me young lady. He said, why, young lady? You know, it's more likely you'll be hit by a car than I'll be dead by the next time we see each other. And he gave me an ironwood bird. He gave me a gift after all those years. And he handed it to me, and he said, indestructible. I want to tell you one other story. Do I have
Please.
Time? Okay.
Yes.
So I want to tell you a story about a Mexican student that I just met. Well, I went to Mexico to teach recently, and I was tired and didn't really feel like going. Wendell was there. I'm glad I went. And, you know, I thought to myself, okay, you know, I didn't know how many people would be there or what. And I said, well, what if there's one person? What if there's one person who gets what you have to say? And I said, you know what, that would be great. If one person really gets what I have to say, I had a lot of things I wanted to say. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to pass on what I learned. And I said, well, if there's one, that's good, you know, you only need one. So I went, and I talked, there were 800 people that attended this and speech that I gave. And I talked about subjective time. And I think subjective time is the single most important variable in terms of transforming consciousness. That's where I believe change happens. So one young Mexican man attended my keynote speech, and I saw him among the 800. And then he showed up for my working on trance with individuals, and where I taught exactly how you can shift a mental state, not unlike what I saw Erickson do with Mandy in just a moment, because this is my battle against psychopharmacology. I think if people can get out of desperate moments in a moment, they may not feel the need to reach for a drug. So we have to get on time, in time, with subjective time. So he came to the individual one. I passed out my little egg timers, as I'm wont to do now. And so then he came to the third talk I gave on couples as well, and he played a part of being the husband in the couple. And in it, he remembered in a moment a bad experience he had where he came in second in some event, and he was fine with being second, but his parents were disappointed. At the end of this role play that he did, he came up to me afterwards, having understood everything I tried to convey. And he said, "Here's my cell phone. Would you call my parents and would you tell them something you feel honestly about me?" And I said to him, "Yes." And he put me on the cell phone and I said to his parents, "I want you," in my terrible Spanish, "I quiero que sabes, I want you to understand that your son was my best student, the number one at the whole conference of 1,000 people. And he is so serious and so dedicated. Thank you for raising him to be the man he is." And then he waited for everybody to leave in the whole place. And he came up to me and he said, "You have given us your heart and your soul, and I want to give you mine." And he sat down and he sang me this song that says, "I invite you to laugh and to suffer with me, to cry and smile, to share all of love. I would like to dress you in the wings of a butterfly and give you the gift of the color of roses and bring you to where you will never suffer cold. And if you leave, I will say thank you, dear one, for all of life." And I said to myself, "Oh, he's the one, Gerardo Piedra Sanchez. You are why I came to Mexico. Thank you." So, do I have 1 minute?
1 minute.
Okay, if I have 1 minute, I want to read to you a poem that I wrote to Erickson, and it's on my book cover, The Tao of a Woman, and explains what the book cover is. And it's called A Lesson from the Heart. I embroidered for my teacher. I made this a gift for Milton Erickson right before he died. I had made several. I embroidered for my teacher a gift that he received weeks before he died. It appears to be an ordinary apple tree, like one he described from his childhood. But it is really a representation of the coronary arteries. Your heart is an upside down tree, drawing nourishment from the earth and rooted in the divine. Even your broken heart can be a port of entry for one who grieves. Thank you.
When we started today, I mentioned that the learning objectives were to list a source of renewal and inspiration for each speaker and identify a source of inspiration and renewal for yourself. So in the last 5 minutes, I would encourage you, invite you into a trance, and my learned colleague here, Dr. Shelley Ritterman, is going to sing us a song to help us go into our trance.
All right. You know, when I turned 60, I said to myself, "What would you like to do?" And I said, "I'd like to sing." And I said to myself, "You're too old to sing." And I said, "Mind your own business." So, I see trees of green, red roses too. I watch them bloom for me and for you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, "How do you do?" They're really saying, "I love you." I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, ooh, what a wonderful world. So hang in there, people. Don't give up the fight. We're very much needed, more now than ever. And we're the ones responsible for preserving the brain organ. I mean, who loves the brain organ more than we do?
We do.
Let's make sure it survives. It's an endangered species.
I thank you all for coming. May peace be upon you.